people in the Tibet movement because they are splitting their consciousness and they're having a jolly time with their dharma and running around after their lamas and doing whatever they're doing. And then on the other side, they're saying, oh, it's all finished and Tibet is all finished, you know. And that's too short-sighted, and it's a failure of analysis. This is a different kind of activism. It has to be a joyful activism and a non-hatred, non-violent activism.
Can you just say a couple of practical things that anyone could do who feels sympathy for the situation and wants to do something? What would you suggest?
I suggest they talk a lot to people. They get on the net, they sign petitions, they write, they go and see their congresspersons if they live in the United States. In other places, they talk to their governments. Actually, European governments and people are more active and more ahead of the United States. I think Latin American ones, too. Learn a lot about it and wake up about it, find out about it, and become themselves a node of spreading that information. I think that's the key thing, actually. And then once they do that, then they will associate with others who do that. And also cheer up. People who get activists tend to get very self-righteous, and they get all impatient with people who don't do something, and they get all angry, and that's no good. The key thing, though, is happiness. I like Isabel Losada's slogan about think globally and act joyfully. And it helped inspire my slogan that I like to make when I give talks to people, which gets a very mixed reaction. But it is that it's our duty as activists in this area to be so happy in what we're doing that even they kill us, we will die happy.
Where shall we sing the song? Oh, mighty Emehu. Forever in our heart the song. Oh, mighty Emehu.
That's it for Sprouts. You've been listening to stories from the Tibet Connection radio program online at thetibetconnection.org. The music you heard included Tibet Was a Country by Tenzin Gyalpo and Chodak from the album Rise Up. Sprouts is a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country, bringing you local radio productions of national interest. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Rudenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. This week's producer was myself, Rebecca Novick, in Dharamsala, India. Thank you for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
And you're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM and freakradio.org in Santa Cruz, California. Coming up next, it's Bathrop's Piers Broadsides, 2 hours of civil rights chatter, and a special phone interview with Mendocino marijuana spokesperson. I'm not sure if he's speaking for the weed itself or for those who want to use it medicinally. Jim Hill, who should be calling in about half an hour. Stay tuned.
Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto, le di unos tuceros que cuando las abro perfecto distingo lo negro del blanco y en el alto cielo su fondo estrellado, y en las multitudes una amiga que yo amo. Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto y ha dado el vino en todo su ancho, traba noche y día, grillos y canarios, martillos, turbinas ladridos chubascos y la voz tan tierna de mi bien amada. Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto, me ha dado el sonido y el abecedario, con él las palabras que pienso y declaro, madre, amiga, hermana, y los alumbrando la ruta del alma de la que estoy amando. Gracias a la vida que me ha dado tanto, me ha dado la marcha de mis pies cansados. Con ellos anduve ciudades y charcos, playas y desiertos, montañas y llanos.
And that was Roy Bailey from his number Gracias a la Vida, Thanks to Life. Anyway, on the line with us now is Donna Dice. Hi, Donna. How you doing?
Okay, how are you?
I'm okay. Your arm seems to be recovering somewhat.
Yeah, I still need at least 20 degrees range of motion on my side lateral move.
So you still have the effects of the arm that Sergeant Christian Lamas broke?
Oh, yeah. The chiropractor has to break adhesion twice a week between the bone and the muscle. It's calcinated. Called frozen shoulder.
Frozen shoulder. Looks like might have been better if the police department gave you the cold shoulder, but instead on May 9th you had an encounter with Sergeant Lamas, and now you're charged with resisting arrest?
Yeah.
I know that the story has been covered. In fact, I've written about it on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, Santa Cruz Indie Media, IMC, for those who have a computer and want to Google for Santa Cruz IMC. And you've written a little story about it recently, or actually kind of a small update on a court appearance that you had yesterday with Attorney Ben Rice. You want to tell us what's happening?
Well, it was just to set a date for the pretrial hearing, which is going to be September 3rd at 10 a.m. for anybody that wants to attend.
And what department is that going to be?
Judge Siegel.
Probably two, but it could be one or two. I'm never quite clear which is which.
One or two, but my name is spelled D-E-I-S-S, so pretty easy to find.
And you actually you weren't at this appearance yesterday morning. Ben just took care of it?
Yes.
But you spoke to him afterward, and he's going to be putting in some kind of a special motion on this Friday. Is that true?
That's what he said.
And is that an appearance people can go to hear the motion?
I guess it's open court.
And you know the time and the court?
No, I don't.
Huh. Okay, well, I'm imagining if it's a motion, well, it's either at 8:30 or at 10, then it's probably in Judge Siegel's court, which is either 1 or 2. It's a little vague for everybody, but who knows? You know, if you find out possibly before the end of the show, Donna, and you want to let us know, do, because there might be some people interested in this motion that Attorney Ben Rice is going to make. What is that motion, do you know?
To have the court pay for an investigator in the case.
So apparently the police department's 50-page reports are not enough for Ben Rice, huh?
Well, there's a lot in that report that needs to be examined and investigated about the conduct of the police department and how they're running things there.
I know that Ben, for 20 years ago, he actually was part of the Commission for a Citizens, a Coalition for a Citizens Police Review Commission. That's the words I'm trying to spit out there. And they were successful in setting up the City Council Citizens Police Review Board, which had some power and used less of it than it should have for about 6 or 7 years, and then died in the January of 2003, thanks to the Santa Cruz City Council and the police department eliminating it. But the investigator, I guess, that Ben is trying to get for you has to do specifically with solving your case, right, with defending you. Is that right?
Sure.
Okay. And I know you're still living in a vehicle, right?
Yes.
Have you been finding it any further encounters with the police? Have they been leaving you alone? And if what's been happening with that?
Well, they've been leaving me alone, but of course I'm to myself a lot, reading books and writing and listening to the radio, so I'm not out there raising hell.
Well, you do show up at the drum circle illegally being in a parking lot for more than 15 minutes without a vehicle. So you are a criminal still, I have to say. So again, give us...
I don't think so.
I don't either, but that's according to Mayor Coonerty's parking lot panic law, the law that says you can only be in a parking lot for 15 minutes and then only if you have a car or bicycle and are parking it or retrieving it, you are a criminal, and so is everybody else dancing, serving, or eating food at the Food Not Bombs meal on Wednesday next to the farmer's market.
I thought you weren't a criminal unless you were judged by a judge.
I think we can leave that to our police department. They're pretty good judges of conduct, wouldn't you say? Probably not.
I would say they're extremely paranoid and need psychiatric evaluation.
Well, I guess people who are, you know, who believe in a police state and giving the police powers that, you know, selective enforcement powers that the city council has given our police department locally to deal with, quote, problems on Pacific Avenue, they have a different ideology. I don't know if I'd call them in need of psychiatric aid unless you... Well, I think people have a right to have a police state mentality. I just don't want it running the city is my concern, and not running the country, that's for sure. Again, give us the date that you will be next. I mean, I know there's a date tomorrow that you're not familiar... we don't know whether it's 8:30 or 10 to hear Ben Rice argue for the court to pay an investigator. Does he think it's likely to be granted, this motion, or... Okay. But you have another date coming up in early September. You mentioned before. Tell us that date again.
September 3rd, 10 a.m.
Okay. That's in Departments 1 or 2, and if you look on the calendar for DICE, D-E-I-S-S, which is how you spell your last name, you can find that out. Donna, thank you for letting me intrude again and telling us what's happening. Anything else you want to say to folks out there? And I know you were working for quite a while with tenants' rights, and then also for kind of organizing people in vehicles for their rights, people who live in their vehicles. Any words of consolation, wisdom, alarm, or amusement?
Well, just Linda Jolly said that 20 California cities allow people in their vehicles to sleep in the city parking lot, say, between 9 p.m. and 7 p.m., which would be a partial solution for those who have vehicles. And it's cost-free, and they should do it.
Yeah, it is true that if you are able to get the consent of a church or a business, and there's no more than two or three vehicles in that lot, you can park in Santa Cruz in a parking lot overnight and sleep in your vehicle, but, of course, that's not public property. That's private property. There is no provision for people to sleep anywhere on public property in the city of Santa Cruz. And that, of course, makes 1,500 to 2,000 people illegal every night in the city limits, since tonight there's space for only 40 to 60 people, I believe. Still not sure if the... Sorry?
I just wanted to tell you, too, Warren Berry, the investigator for the police internal affairs, called, and I just told him to call Ben Rice. I couldn't talk to him, so.
Yeah, the IA, the Internal Affairs Department, which is supposed to be checking out misconduct, and I guess you filed a complaint against Sergeant Christian Lamas for breaking your arm, right?
Yeah.
So I guess he's supposed to be, you know, investigating Sergeant Lamas for excessive force, and I regard this more of like excessive farce in terms of this investigation. Though I don't know Sergeant Berry, and he may be a very, you know, perspicacious and thorough investigator, but it seemed to me that the fact that the police department and the associated officers forwarded these charges, which and I've read the police reports you let us take a look at, Donna. And I hope at some point they get posted on Indie Bay because it's interesting. They're so well. They just, you know, there are no witnesses to your supposed throwing coffee on the sergeant, and that charge was dropped as well, other than the sergeant himself, the guy who broke your arm. And I spoke to four or five witnesses who saw something else happen, namely the sergeant fling you around, which caused the coffee to go in all directions, and then break your arm, and then stand or crouch on top of you, and then handcuff you with your arm broken, and finally delay medical treatment. At least the whole situation, as the witnesses described it, seemed to be pretty outrageous. And since Sergeant Berry's investigation doesn't yet seem to have gotten to that key information, because if it had, Sergeant Lamas wouldn't be, you know, on active duty, and I suspect he is, although I couldn't get a straight answer out of Sergeant Harms when I talked to him downtown a week ago on that issue. I think we have a police department that is pretty much concerned with protecting its own. That's my concern. Anyway, I appreciate your being on the air.
I think it's outrageous that they haven't sent me a get well card, and they're leaving me exposed to potential violence, basically, by not protecting me. Whether it comes from the police or elsewhere, violence.
If anybody wants to check out the situation tomorrow, Ben Rice will be in court. I guess, you know, if we hear from you before the end of the show, we'll know whether it's 8:30 or 10, and you know what, or maybe some other time, maybe it's even later. Otherwise, we'll try to get an update from you later. And Donna, thanks for giving us the scoop.
Okay, and I'll talk to you later.
Alrighty, bye bye. Okay. And phone lines are open, and you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. As mentioned before, that was Donna Dice, who goes to court on September 3rd, 10 a.m. for pretrial hearings. She had a motions hearing yesterday, which her attorney, Ben Rice, attended and set up another hearing tomorrow to have the courts pay for an investigator. This is costing a lot of money because a particular sergeant, backed up by his police department, went on a fishing expedition for marijuana. That's what it looks like to me. That's my analysis based upon the reports that I've received. And you can follow the whole thing on Santa Cruz Indie Media if you want to check it out. And just Google for Sergeant Lamas, capital L-E, capital M-O-S-S, or Donna Dice, D-E-I-S-S. Well, last time on Sunday afternoon, I was playing for you the Downtown Commission's the police department of the Downtown Commission stonewalling Commissioner Sheila Coonerty's request for information on crime stats in the parking lots, because as we know, there was supposed to be a six-month review of this crazy Coonerty law, the parking lot panic law, that suddenly removed 10 solid blocks of city space, public space, from public use. And supposedly with a big crime threat that we were never able to get any stats on the existence of. So Sheila wanted some indication that what was cooking with the crime situation, or how well things were working, and has crime, drug use, needle use, alcohol use increased in other parts of the city, like the high schools and elsewhere. And she asked Zach Friend about it. We're going to tune in on that particular part of the conversation at the Downtown Commission in just a moment. That was the commission meeting of July 24th. And then at 6:30, we'll be hearing again from, I believe it's Jim Hill. Hope I've got his name right. I may not. I'll correct it if I haven't. He'll be calling in from Mendocino. So stay tuned. Having a little trouble with this machine. Could it be batteries? Could it be it's running out of steam? Luckily, we have a backup machine, which hopefully will do a slightly better job. Let's see if we're in the right place. Here we are. Okay, so the first voice you're going to hear is that of Zach Friend, who is a police department, essentially a PR man, who deals with the media, and essentially I call him the Little Goebbels of the police department, or the Scott McClellan of Santa Cruz, former Bush's former, you know, publicity guy. And he puts a spin on things, and he also covers the police department's failure to provide stats, and that's what he's doing here. The other voice you'll hear that is that of Sheila Coonerty, who's a member of the Downtown Commission. She is also Neil Coonerty, the supervisor's sister, and Ryan Coonerty's aunt. They're all part of they're a Bookshop Santa Cruz ownership group. However, Coonerty, the Sheila person, Coonerty, has been concerned with. Well, she's on the ACLU, and she opposed this part of this law, and she's expressing some concern about the police not providing statistics and trying to figure out how she can get the stats. And Zach Friend is essentially telling her to forget it, go to city council. He's not going to help her.
The direction would come from the city council, not the downtown commission, on requests of our agency for this information. The first presentation came to the downtown commission, then the recommendation came to the city council, and the city council's motion and minutes, as you've read, were specifically to provide an FYI, which does not require any kind of public comment at all. As I said, I'm here as a courtesy regarding this overview. So it actually, to just correct that point, if you want to receive more additional information.
And a moment of clarity here. He says it doesn't require public comment. Actually, any item on an agenda, the Downtown Commission or the City Council does require public comment, though the current chair of the Downtown Commission, Jerry Mandel, is adopting the Coonerty approach of cutting back public comment. But we aren't really talking about public comment here. We're talking about a request from an official city commission that helped draft and put together this law and then forwarded it to the City Council with a recommendation for information. They aren't really the public in the same sense. They are a designated investigatory group. So Zach is, of course, misspeaking himself.
Information regarding this ordinance specifically, the avenue to do it is through the City Council, or as Mr. Norris knows very well, through the Public Records Act request process. But it isn't specifically in this forum right here to ask the police department for any kind of specific stats or run specific information.
Okay, so just let me be clear about this for the future. Mm-hmm. Because if this kind of thing comes to us again, and we are asked to vote on something because it will have an effect on decreasing crime, we as a downtown commission do not have a right to ask for those statistics nor to ask for follow-up on those statistics, but we are asked to vote on it. Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm telling you that technically that is correct, but I mean, had the City Council provided direction that the information should come back in their motion with specific stats like this, then the answer to your question would be no, actually, because then I would have provided it.
So he's saying, and he's actually giving an absurd answer and then quickly brushing over it. He says, the answer is we don't have to give you anything, but actually, all you have to do is get the City Council to send us an okay on it or make your own Public Records Act request. Now, I'm going to be talking to former mayors of Santa Cruz about this policy in the past around the Downtown Commission and whether they, in fact, do have a right to seek information directly from the police department, because it's always been my understanding that they do. And I've never heard of them in the past declining to give information and using this kind of a stonewall tactic that Zach Friend is using here.
But the forum was to request that the motion be made at the City Council level, which you are an advisory body to come up with that. But all they simply asked for, and in fact it was a very simple passage, the motion they had was just to come back with 6 months with an FYI to them about the stats, which we did. It did not specify increases, decreases, or narcotics, or any additional information like that.
So at the meeting, that is what they discussed wanting. So you're saying they didn't put it into the motion?
Absolutely not.
And then when they got the information, they didn't see that it was missing?
Well, that's correct. The only request I've ever received about this has actually been from you since.
Okay. Yeah. And if I wanted that information in order to evaluate what happened, I couldn't get it from you.
Well, you can file a Public Records Act request for certain information, I mean, for stats and such, which is a formal process and may or may not have costs involved depending upon whether the reports are pre-made or not. They wouldn't be, in this case, pre-made. They would have to be created. Or it would be something that would be done through the city council motion, and that information actually would have been provided to the city council unless the direction was specifically to bring it back to the downtown commission. Uh-huh. In fact, their motion didn't even specifically say that we had to provide the FYI back to the downtown commission. That was provided as a courtesy by our agency.
Okay. So any further concerns I have to go to the city council. I can't request any further information here.
Unless you... Sorry, Chris.
Just if you're requesting that the police department actually spend effort, time, and resources to provide the information, I'd recommend that you make a recommendation to city council that you'd like that information and specific about what you want, and the commission act on it, and then we will provide that to the council as a report from the commission.
Okay. And if when this had happened, okay, if rather than taking the word of the police that this was a problem, we had said, what are the statistics, and we need to see these narcotic statistics, would we still not have been able to get them at that point?
Well, I did provide you with calls for service broken down by call type, if you remember, but that wasn't because it was requested of me. That was just because I did it.
Actually, it was because we're talking about the original parking garage paranoia law, the law that initially applied only to the four garages that said can't come in unless you got a car or vehicle, and then can only stay for 15 minutes, unless, of course you're a privileged city worker. Initially, Coonerty tried to rush this through the city council, and a lot of us raised a stink, so he sent it to the downtown commission. And the downtown commission didn't get any stats from the police department, so they delayed it until they did. So it's the reason he provided the stats was because they were essentially being demanded of him. Now, it's unclear why he's making such a fuss about this. It leads one to believe that the stats may contradict what he has to say or maybe not support what he has to say. So we're going to be looking at that as we continue this. But we're going to pause now because we have, I believe this is a caller from Mendocino, on the issue of medical marijuana. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Please listen carefully to this important notice regarding your automobile. We recently...
Apparently that's something of a telemarketer moving right along. I don't think that Free Radio actually owns an automobile, but maybe I'm wrong. You are tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. The name of the show is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse. And what I'm going to do right now is move temporarily from this downtown commission hearing, which I will finish today. And I know it's been split up in a number of parts, playing this downtown commission hearing of July 24th. And I apologize for those who've had to follow it in fragments. It should be available in the library, but I don't think it is because, again, we've had increasingly limited public access. I think primarily because the staff of the city and the city council want to do things essentially behind closed doors, and they don't want the public interfering or even knowing what they're doing without, you know, they want them to have to dig to get the information. I'm not talking about necessarily massive corruption. It's just there is no commitment to any open public process. Not that there ever really has been a lot of that kind of commitment, but it's shrinking daily, or at least it seems like monthly. Here's a letter in the Anderson Valley Advertiser, which I'm going to read. That's a weekly newspaper out of Boonville up in Mendocino, which has a lot of interesting stories and also interesting letters. This is from Pebbles Trippett of the Mendocino Medical Marijuana Advisory Board, and she writes the following. Calling all attorneys. Open letter to attorneys from cannabis patients seeking justice in the courts. Dear attorneys, this letter is to invite you to become a part of a legal team researching and challenging Mendocino County Code 9.31, Marijuana Cultivation, a civil nuisance ordinance, with a limit of 25 marijuana plants per parcel, which is being improperly used by the sheriff's office personnel for law enforcement purposes to criminally threaten, intimidate, arrest, and eradicate the medicine of qualified cannabis patients and their caregivers. It is a new law enforcement dilemma that there are no remaining local criminal codes that sheriff's deputies can use against legitimate patients now that Measure B has been shelved as having the same state limits as having been declared unconstitutional in People versus Kelly. And I think we're going to have more explanation of this soon. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert. It's Craig, Canada.
Hey, Craig, what's up?
Oh, I'm sitting over here in Luton Nelson Park, sucking on a soda. I was going to turn in. You called me up and you asked about how it was going as far as getting on the ballot for city council.
Uh-huh.
And so I was going to turn the documents in this afternoon, and I had 30 signatures.
Uh-huh.
But I had made an error on one of them, and I said, you know, what do I do about this? And so the woman at the counter got out the whiteout. And I said, oh, you know, I have these signatures that appear to be in Bonnie Doon and Scotts Valley, and she just gave me the whiteout. So at the moment, I have, and then I went down, I sat down at my computer after that, and I went to the office supply and bought one of those whiteout tape things.
Uh-huh.
They're really great. They're $2.79, and they're much better than the liquid.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, and sat down and Googled the addresses, and so 9 of them were, like, in Scotts Valley. And so anyway, the upshot is I have 22 signatures at the moment that are not obviously invalid, and I'm hoping to get 8 more. I can turn in 30, and I had all the documents ready to turn in, and we was going to do it this afternoon, but decided to try to get some more signatures in case some of those that appear to be valid are not valid.
So you have... You have another 24 hours or so to get them, or 23
hours. Well, yeah,
hours.
I'm hoping to be there when they open up in the morning and give them the papers, because it's probably going to be a, who knows what's going to happen on the last day.
Well, would you like people to give you a call if they're registered voters in the city who want to sign your petition?
Do I want to give out my phone number for that? I'm not sure if I do, quite frankly.
Well, I'll tell you what we'll do, Craig. I will give out the Huff number. If anybody wants to... lives in the city of Santa Cruz, and that's not the county, and that's not even Live Oak. You have to be in the city limits.
Right. Some of these addresses could be in Live Oak. I have 22 in them at the moment, as I said, that appear.
Yeah, you got to be careful with Live Oak addresses, because some of them aren't. If you're in Live Oak, you're not necessarily in the city. But the number to call is 423-4833. Leave your phone number, and I'll pass it on to Craig Canada, who's running or might be running for city council tomorrow. You can get enough signatures. And Craig, you want to say something about your platform or what issues you're going to be raising in the forums?
Well, it seems to me that if the city council is going to be making all these ordinances dealing with the homeless people and poor people, there ought to be somebody on the city council that's been homeless and poor and can give them some idea of what they might be doing with these ordinances. I would like to believe that they really don't wish to inflict cruel and unusual punishment on people for being homeless. I'm for rent control. I have a real issue with the fact that there are 1,000 units of emergency and transitional housing in this town, and not one for medical marijuana patients. And so that whole constellation of issues is what I intend to represent.
So that's Craig Canada speaking to us, and he can be reached through the Huff line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is also my phone line, 423-4833. Leave your phone number, again, if you're a registered voter in the city of Santa Cruz and you'd like to sign his candidacy petition.
I'd very much like to get Tom Levitt and Steve Argue's signatures on this. If they happen to be in town tonight. Thanks, Robert.
Sure,
I intend to turn the papers in, and it's possible I have enough valid signatures, but as I said, I can turn in 8 more, and I'd really like to get those 8.
Well, I think you need 30, right?
You need 20 valid. You can turn in no more than 30.
I
had 30, and then I sat down and checked them on the computer, and 9 of them were out of the city limits.
I think that's a wise thing you're doing. And if you call me after the show and leave me a message, I'll call you back with that. Call me on the Huff line now, and I'll try and get you Thomas Levitt's phone number and Steve Argue's numbers.
Okay, thanks.
All right, man. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And actually, I contacted the city clerk's office before I came into the show to find out how many people actually have filed their papers, and they are the following people: Don Lane, Ryan Coonerty, Catherine Byers, Bias Jacob Cabrera, Lisa Molino, Tim Fitzmaurice, and David Terezas. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, Robert, please. This is Jim Hill calling from Mendocino County.
Hey, Jim, you're on the air, and you're talking to Robert, believe it or not.
Okay, I didn't recognize your voice, Robert.
You're fading in and out, though. How are you doing on the phone? Are you on a cell phone?
Yeah, how am I now?
It sounds better. I was just reading the letter from Pebbles Trippett in the current issue, or the July 30th issue of the Anderson Valley Advertiser, describing the situation, but it's a little... Pebbles writes in a very dense and compact fashion, which I admire, but I think a number of people might not be able to follow. Tell us what the background is up in, well, first of all, which organization are you with yourself?
I'm with the Mendocino Medical Marijuana Advisory Board.
And what exactly is that?
It's a group of individuals, of citizens in the county, that help advise the county on matters of policy in regard to medical marijuana laws.
Does the county actually listen to you?
We like to think at times they do, but sometimes maybe they don't.
You're beginning to fade a little. Stay with us.
Okay. I'm in one spot, so we'll see how we can do.
All right. Yeah, just keep talking loud, and I'll keep broadcasting you loud. So I know that in 2000, the county of Mendocino passed an ordinance, essentially an advisory ordinance that gave liberal limits to the amount of marijuana that could be grown?
Yes, it allowed us to grow up to 25 plants and possess the equivalent in dried cannabis.
And then in 2002, 2003, 2004, SB 420 was passed, the state law that kind of supposedly codified Proposition 215, the 1996 initiative that legalized marijuana in the state, but actually may have limited it unduly, right?
Well, it didn't codify it. The Compassionate Use Act of 1996 was already codified under Health and Safety Code 11362.5. It created another set of rights under 11362.7. And there's been some rulings that it amended the Compassionate Use Act, which is not allowed under California initiative law. The only way an initiative can be amended is by going back to the voters of the state. So that's what the argument is now with this, the appellate court cases in Kelly, is does the Medical Marijuana Act of 2004 or Senate Bill 420 modify or amend the Compassionate Use Act.
And the People versus Kelly ruling, which was what, a Court of Appeals ruling?
Yes, it was a Court of Appeals out of Los Angeles.
And it found SB 420, insofar as it amended or limited the number of plants that someone could grow, and that's not limited in Proposition 215, the original initiative, that's unconstitutional then.
Exactly, Robert. Since the number amounts weren't in 215, then you cannot add them later.
And Jerry Brown, our erstwhile turncoat attorney general, who was initially such a big liberal and actually broadcast his own alternative radio in the early 90s and then became mayor of Oakland, has gone distinctly to the right, wants to appeal this People versus Kelly decision to restore restrictions and limits on the number of marijuana plants someone can cultivate or possess?
That's correct. He filed a petition to review with the Supreme Court on July 1st.
And similarly, up in Mendocino, the area where you are, an initiative called Measure B was... Are you with me there? Sounds like some
music.
Yep,
I'm with you.
Measure B was filed by some critics and presumably some... I guess there were three individuals, Michael Sweeney and a couple of other guys, who were pushing this measure, which in essence limited the number of, again, marijuana plants that people could grow, and it passed by 52% to 48% in this kind of election, but...
Yeah, that's partly correct. They didn't file it. They didn't gather signatures. What they did is they tried to twist the arm of the Board of Supervisors, and instead of going through the normal initiative process where you collect 3,038 signatures in our county, which is 10% of who voted in the last election, they forced it through with the Board of Supervisors, and the Board of Supervisors put it on the ballot themselves.
Right. Actually, we tried to get our city council to put on the ballot our local Measure K, which would have made marijuana enforcement of all kinds the lowest priority, and we couldn't get them to do it, so people had to actually go around and get about 4,000 signatures, which I think is a similar 10% of the vote here in the city of Santa Cruz. So this was put on the ballot, and this was an off-year election, off-month election, off-season election, I guess you'd call it. And so it passed 52%, or has there been a major shift? Measure, what was it, would you call it, what was your proposition in 2000 that okayed much higher, more liberal use of marijuana for medical purposes passed by a much larger percentage, right?
58 to 42 percent in 2000, and this last one was just 52 to 48.
Is that because people have become more conservative, or
actually the demographic? Some of the county has changed. I think the some of the voters have you know been a little afraid to register to vote. I think the turnout for the the no on B side was less than expected because, frankly, we just didn't do a good job of getting the word out, and I think everybody thought that since it was a marijuana initiative, it would have no problem sailing through the Mendocino County Electric.
Unfortunately,
that's not what happened.
You mean being defeated, you mean?
Exactly.
Now, what exactly did this initiative do? I understand it was put on hold, but what did it do before it was put on hold?
It did two things. It repealed Measure G, the initiative back in 2000, and that's where the dishonesty, Robert, comes in, is because when Measure G was originally passed in 2000, they forced the citizens of the county to go get signatures on petitions to put it in for up for election. And when they decided to repeal it, they undid that process, and they simply repealed it by going directly to the Board of Supervisors. So that was one thing that Measure B, or Bravo, did. The other thing it did is it reduced the plant limits to the state guidelines in 11362.77A, which is 6 or 12 plants. And that is what has been ruled unconstitutional. So half of Measure B has been ruled unconstitutional in Kelly, and the other half is repealing Measure G.
And
so they call it log rolling. They kind of put two issues together to try to gain enough support, even though one of the issues was ruled unconstitutional before the election.
Now, what about Measure G? What's the significance of that measure being overruled? It means there's no longer any. I guess it means
what Measure G was a personal use ordinance. It was the lowest priority. It directed the police to make marijuana enforcement of 25 plants or less its lowest priority.
For medical use or for all uses?
For medical, recreation, and religious uses.
Okay.
And it directed the budgetary authority, and it did a few other things, but basically it was all aimed at the same thing of trying to legalize the three different uses of marijuana in that community when it is 25 plants or less.
And after Measure G's passage in 2000, for the next 8 years, what kind of enforcement happened? How did the legal authorities treat the medical marijuana users and the recreational marijuana users of Mendocino County?
Well, I don't know how it is down there in Santa Cruz County, but we have a lot of good law enforcement following the law, understanding the law, and we have a few law enforcement that just refuse to implement it, and they do whatever they can to stand in the way of patients' rights. So that the law enforcement departments are split. I don't believe there was a conviction between 2000 and 2008 for any marijuana cultivation offense. That I know of, in the courts. Tony Craver, who was the sheriff, and Norm Vroman, who was the district attorney, didn't prosecute 25 plants or less, so they followed the spirit of the will of the voters because it was, a 58 to 42 landslide, and they pretty much implemented the 25 plant limit.
And yet this year you had some folks coming forward with a Measure B, which severely cut back on the number of plants people could have, and also overturned Measure G. Where do these folks come from, and where did their support come from? What was that all about?
We don't know where their support come from. Some have suggested it might be federal intervention. Mike Sweeney has been involved with some federal issues before, so there's some suspicions that it may be an underhanded federal program. I don't know where it came from. They want to blame the large commercial grows. We do have a big rural county. It's 1,600 square miles. There's only 88,000 people. There's lots of back roads that are uninhabited, or, you know, it's a 30-minute drive off of asphalt. So there are some large commercial grows that take place, especially in the North County up near the Humboldt County line. And I guess they just saw this as an opportunity to try to blame all the commercial growing on this Measure G, and that was their intent and their focus in their advertising was, let's see if, you know, we can cut this down to 6 plants, and we'll do that by blaming the 25 plant grower for all the commercial problems.
And the position of the Mendocino Medical Marijuana Advisory Board, of which you are a member on this measure, was what?
On Measure B, we were against it. It really doesn't solve the commercial problem, which it purports to. It makes a person with medical recommendation a felon at 7 plants or 8 ounces or anything over 8 ounces. It doesn't help free and safe or free and affordable access for patients. It becomes a hindrance to it, and it kind of gives law enforcement the green light to harass patients. So we were totally against it.
Now, there was this decision, actually, even before Measure B made the ballot, or I should say, even before Measure B passed, People versus Kelly. You want to go into that a little bit more?
Sure. People versus Kelly. What happened there is the Los Angeles case. Kelly was caught, I believe, with 9 ounces and 13 plants, just over the limits on both accounts. The prosecutor argued that if he was over 8 ounces, that he could be held accountable for possession, not for intent to distribute or for sales, but for possession. And he, during his argument to the jury, explained to them that 8 ounces was a ceiling. And so the Kelly court said that was a prejudicial error, and they reversed the ruling and sent it back to the lower court, for another trial.
And this was in Los Angeles County?
Yes, that was in District 2 in Los Angeles County.
And has that district changed its policy in terms of prosecuting people with more than 8 ounces and more than 12 plants for medical marijuana?
I would say that they're probably waiting on the decision of the Supreme Court whether they are going to accept review. They did petition for review. The Attorney General petitioned for review on July 1st. I believe the Supreme Court has till September 22nd to accept review or deny it. And so I would assume that the Los Angeles County District Attorney's Office is aggressively denying patients their rights as usual.
Hmm. You think they're waiting or they're proceeding to deny people their rights?
Oh no, I think they're denying them. I don't think they're accepting it as law until the Supreme Court denies review or accepts review. In these situations, they never give the benefit of the doubt to the patients.
And also,
I haven't seen it happen.
And this isn't an injunction, right? This is simply a finding in one case. So the DA in LA and other counties can just go ahead and say, it's not a ruling. It's just it's one district court's opinion in one case, right?
Well, now that they petitioned the Supreme Court for review, the Supreme Court can deny review but affirm the ruling. So. And then we've also had one July 31st, you can check out of, I believe it's the 3rd District, Sacramento. And don't quote me on the name pronunciation, but it's something like P-H-A-M-P-H-O-K-D-Y, Famphocody. I'm not sure, you can look it up on the internet. It is also a same situation where a patient had a little bit more than the 8 ounces, and they also ruled 11-362.77A unconstitutional. So we now have 2 appellate districts, 2 separate courts, both saying that the Compassionate Use Act was amended by the plant limits in the Medical Marijuana Program Act.
Yeah, I haven't heard anything about this in Santa Cruz and how it's impacted the district attorney down here. I don't think there have been any statements by our very own Bob Lee, who is taken out after any medical marijuana distributors who are outside the city limits, at least he's taken out after a couple of them, claiming that the state law and the state initiative does not protect medical marijuana distributors unless they're members of a collective that is directly serving patients and caretaking them. You probably have some clubs up in Mendocino that are just selling marijuana, right? I mean,
we only have one actually. We're kind of what corn is to Iowa. Medical marijuana, pretty much our number one industry there. There's not a scarcity of supply. Some estimates are 20,000 people are involved out of the 88,000 residents. So you get an idea that it's pretty, you know.
Send me a box.
yeah, sure.
But you know, what I'm saying is, I'm asking you, is the store, the distributor up there, is that like a little retail store? Like we have two retail stores here. One is
it is a retail store, but I believe it's collectively formed. And the district attorney is right. The only protections that are offered to patients, well, there's two protections, and that is a caregiver defense where you're actually providing for the housing, health, or safety of a person as their caregiver, much you'd be like after your mother or your grandmother. That would allow you to possess marijuana for her, and that would be in a caregiving situation. And then the other one is a collective association, and one of the provisions of Senate Bill 420 was that patients within the state of California may collectively associate to cultivate marijuana. It doesn't say to distribute, it only says to cultivate. So there's some that say, well, if you cultivate, you have to distribute, and, you know, there is no, you know, there is no distribution without cultivation, so all distribution is a cultivation project.
Mm-hmm.
So there hasn't been a strong appellate court, although I believe there's one coming out of San Jose named Mensch, M-E-N-T-S.
That's, yeah, Mensch is actually the guy that in Santa Cruz who has been prosecuted. Right, but I mean, is this a state court, or we're talking state court or federal court?
No, that's state court.
Oh, okay.
It's the state appellate court. You can also look that up on the internet.
Uh-huh.
And Mensch is at the appellate court review level, and I believe they've had the dockets from both sides. They've had the written pleadings, and they're just waiting to do oral pleadings. And then once they do the oral pleadings, they'll have 90 days. But that's a caregiver case, I believe, and that will determine, you know, what caregiving is. The question, Robert, is when you're providing for the housing, health, or safety for a person, you know, what do you exactly have to do? Does just providing them marijuana provide for their health, or do you actually have to provide more than just that?
Well, it seems to me that, I mean, I know in Santa Cruz, as in apparently Mendocino, there are retail stores that sell it. They aren't collective associations. They aren't caregivers. They are, you know, retail establishments that supposedly aren't making a mint. I have no idea how much they're making. Their books aren't open. But, you know, they are, you know, like in, you know, Oaksterdam in Oakland or San Francisco. So apparently many jurisdictions or a number of jurisdictions, at least a few jurisdictions, are not using D.A. Bob Lee's interpretation, or apparently what you say is the actual wording of 1136.2.7. Is that the state health and safety code?
Yes, right. That's the Medical Marijuana Program Act is 11362.7. Uh-huh. That's the Medical Marijuana Program Act, and 11362.5 is the Compassionate Use Act of 1996.
And so
that's where you can find them.
So
it's subject to interpretation, Robert. I mean, you know, the one thing that I believe Prop 215 was recommend that the state find affordable access for patients. So they may be working under that provision of 215. How do you provide, you know, affordable and safe access if you don't have some type of retail establishment? So, you know, there are some arguments back and forth on whether it comes out of, you know, just providing access.
Uh-huh. Well, I know that, again, getting back to Mendocino and Measure B passed 52% to 48%, overturning Measure G and limiting the number of plants, and then it was put on hold because it was found that violates People v. Kelly, and I guess there was a case that came up. Was it Laguna Hanamoto versus Ramachek?
Laguna Hanamoto was a case where the plaintiffs sued the county because they believed that it was a multiple question ballot. It was confusing to people because they were asking two distinct questions. They were asking, do we repeal Measure G and do we set the plant limits back to the state guidelines? So that was one of their arguments. But yeah, the Laguna Hanamoto case has been going on, and they're the ones that have asked Judge Banky to stay Measure B pending the Kelly ruling, because obviously if Kelly determines, if the Supreme Court reviews Kelly and affirms it, it will make Measure B, at least the second half of it, a void, because there will not be anything such as plant limits.
So your colleague on your board, and we're talking with Jim Hill of the Mendocino Medical Marijuana Advisory Board, writes that the sheriff's office subsequently issued a Measure B enforcement policy as a press statement until the courts arrive at a final decision in People v. Kelly regarding the constitutionality of state quantity limits in SB 420. Law enforcement will not enforce Measure B's numerical limits, 6 plants, 8 ounces.
And exactly. That was a stipulated agreement between county council and the attorneys, David Nick and Edie Learman, for Laguna Hanamoto. So that was a stipulated agreement so that we didn't have to go in and get a temporary restraining order to prevent that. The sheriff, the DA said, okay, we understand this is up in the air. We won't enforce Measure B if you won't, you know, impose a temporary restraining order on us.
But then, and according to Pebbles Trippett, along came code 9.31.
Now, 9.31 is a civil ordinance code, so it gets away from the criminal aspect, and it's over to the civil nuisance aspect. They're trying to limit cultivation within certain parameters, within so many feet of a school, a bus stop, a church, whatever they can, or, you know, an intersection, whatever they can do, they're trying to make it a civil nuisance ordinance where you have to go through a civil abatement procedure in order to, you know, in order to limit the rights of patients, basically.
And is this being used much? Is this who cooked this up, and what's happening with it?
Well, the Board of Supervisors cooked it up, and I don't know if it was through County Council, Janine Nadell, or where it exactly came from. But the Sheriff's Department, you know, they don't arrest you because you didn't get a permit to put your roofing shingles on. That's not what the Sheriff's Department does. The Sheriff's Department is involved with criminal acts, not with civil acts. So in order for them to abate a nuisance that would violate 9.31, they would have to go into civil court and start a civil proceeding where the defendant would be given the chance to abate the nuisance himself, much like of a building code violation. That's the way I like to think of it, because it's a little simpler. We've all known people that, you know, didn't get a permit for a fence or a roof or something like that. You know, you obviously don't come in with machine guns and arrest everybody and haul them off because they didn't get a
permit. You haven't been to Santa Cruz lately, I guess.
Well, we hope that doesn't keep going.
I catch your drift, though, yeah.
But that's what they'd like to do, and the Sheriff's Department wasn't real clear on that. There are some sheriff's deputies that are, you know, trying to hide behind 9.31, but I think that has been clearly defined, and I think the sheriff understands that it is a civil procedure and that the Sheriff's Department won't be involved.
It says, for example, at least Pebbles writes in her letter, there are multiple sections in 9.31, the ordinance we're talking about, the civil abatement ordinance, in need of research, such as the part that requires medical cannabis not be grown within 1,000 feet of a park, school bus stop, etc. Many of these restrictions are arbitrary and used as tools to harass. As an example of arbitrariness, school bus stops to be used as bus stops under 9.31 are moved regularly without signage necessarily making it known to the public and with a remote district office in charge of locations which are changed annually. On one particular visit from sheriff's deputies based on a 9.31 complaint about the patient growing within 300 rather than 1,000 feet of a park, the deputy told the patient, pull your plants, you're too close to the park. The patient responded, you pull them. The deputy replied, throwing up his hands, not me. The deputy wasn't complaining about the quantity, only the proximity, and even that was a bluff. Any comment on that?
I agree with Pebbles. I'm quite familiar with the situation. It was a bluff. It was sheriff deputies trying to use their badge to impose civil sanctions on somebody. And let's look at the facts, Robert. If you're saying that you cannot grow any plants within so many feet of a bus stop or a school, then you're effectively limiting the plants. So we get back to Kelly again. We can't put plant numbers, not even zero, because that's what that is, right? That says you may grow zero plants within so many feet of a bus stop. And that's in contrast to Kelly again. So
well, isn't that a restriction, though? Like, I mean, they say they're able to limit time, place, and manner, for example, in the use of the First Amendment. You know, you can say what you want, you can distribute what you want, but the city or the state or the federal government can restrict the time, the place, and the manner. Similarly, I guess, with marijuana cultivation, they can restrict time, place, and manner, no? I mean, I don't know.
I'm sure they could if it was in the Compassionate Use Act, but they still can't amend the voter initiative unless they go back to the voters.
Huh.
And that's amending the voter initiative when a voter initiative doesn't have plant numbers.
So it sounds like at least some sheriffs are attempting. You said a kind of a few minutes ago that most sheriffs are operating, you know, within the law, Proposition 215, SB 420, and trying to respect the rights of medical marijuana users and growers, but that some aren't, a few aren't. It sounds like are we talking more than a few are using 9.31 and attempting to get around this and harass?
No, I think there's maybe three or four. Well, there's only 44 deputies in the entire department of Mendocino County. So
have you put out wanted posters on these three or four deputies?
Well, I think they've backed off once once it was made known that wouldn't be tolerated. And what happens basically is they lose their immunity from prosecution if they don't follow the directives from the sheriff's department. And the sheriff's department has made it clear in a directive that this is a civil abatement procedure. So if you're going to pull somebody's plants, you're going to lose your immunity offered by the department. So I think that slowed them all down.
So a section of SB 420 that says you cannot, let's say, medicate, you know, within 1,000 feet of a school, recreational facility, or park, is this constitutionality thrown into question by People v. Kelly, or not?
Well, if it was limiting your possession amounts, I think it would. You know, if it was limiting what you could possess, because that's in the Compassionate Use Act.
What about use?
Well, that's a right guaranteed by this. That's what the Compassionate Use Act did. It gave us the right to use and obtain. So I don't think that they can limit. I don't think they can limit that with a, you know.
In Santa Cruz,
back to limiting initiatives again.
We have a city council candidate who's a medical marijuana user who's been denied housing for years because of his medical marijuana use. In different places. He's also been homeless, and we had issues around that. He has been arrested twice for medicating with a legitimate card. He's a legitimate user outside, and presumably, in theory, within 1,000 feet of a park. Have there been similar cases up in Mendocino, and do you have any sense of how the situation is statewide? It's really... You know, it's hard to find a grid. I mean, you can always find some children's playground attached to a church that's within 1,000 feet of something in the city, you know, that sort of thing.
I agree. Was he successfully prosecuted, Robert, or was he just arrested?
The prosecution is taking place. He's probably listening to the show now. He called in earlier on the show. This is the next to the last day for city council candidates to finish filing their papers, and he's actually raising this issue and other issues if he's able to get on the ballot as a member, you know, as a person running for Santa Cruz City Council.
I got you.
Yeah,
I haven't heard that situation anywhere else, but it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me at all.
Go ahead. We're talking with Jim Hill up in Mendocino, who's been working. How long have you been working with the Mendocino Medical Marijuana Advisory
Since
Board?
Since 2005.
Wow. And is that because you were busted by the police and you got pissed about it, or what happened?
That was an excellent guess. That was an excellent guess. Yes, I became at the end of the long arm of the law also. And once you educate yourself about the different things, you realize that they're just not giving the benefit of the doubt to the growers or the providers of medical marijuana.
The claw of the law.
The what now?
The claw of the law.
The claw of the law. That is a better way.
You know, we have a kind of a hypocritical city council here, which likes to kind of posture as being very liberal. You probably heard of Santa Cruz giving away medical marijuana, and it's the city where Valerie Corral's WAM,
right,
Women and Men
right,
Medical
right.
Marijuana for Medical Marijuana, existed. But actually, we have it's really kind of a front and a fraud. And I'm just wondering how it operates up there. For example, we have what's called an Office of Compassionate Use, which wants to be able to distribute marijuana to poor people, But they are suspending all operations until the feds declare marijuana legal.
Yes, exactly, exactly. The law enforcement likes to bring in the feds when all else is done and it's all sewed up. They say, well, it's still illegal under federal law, and we're going to bring our DEA agent along with us on the raids. And that's what we're seeing now. We're seeing the DEA come in there a little bit on some of the raids, and that's allowing them to destroy all the plants because, you know, it's illegal under federal law.
So that's another method being used with the failure or at least the suspension of Measure B. But I also understand you have marijuana advocates, medical marijuana workers who are pushing to get something on the ballot to overturn Measure B in the event that People v. Kelly is overturned, or?
Well, what we did, yes, there's a couple of ideas going out. One thing that we did is we just put Measure G right back on the ballot, and I did that along with Paula Laguna of the Laguna Animoto. And we said, fine, if you want to repeal Measure G with unconstitutional language, we'll just put it right back on the ballot. And they filed suit against us, and so far that's tied up in court right now, waiting on a ruling also. Hmm. So we just figured, we would just put it right back on the ballot and let the people decide again.
And that'll be at a November election where you're more likely to get... No?
No, because we didn't get a chance. They thwarted us with the court system, and they've delayed it to where now we can't circulate the petitions in time to get them certified and ready for the November. So they'll either go on the March or the next June election.
So you'll have a similar problem with this, but you think you'll be more successful, huh?
I think it's a matter of time. You know, we might have to take one brick out of the wall at a time, but eventually their lies don't hold up to scrutiny, and eventually, you know, we break down their propaganda. And so every election, in my opinion, is just another opportunity to get our voice heard and to expose their lies. So most reform efforts that I've seen go around the country, I kind of keep track of them. They slowly whittle down the opposition as the truth comes out. So I guess it would go along the lines of it's easy to tell a lie, but after you keep telling it, eventually people get a little skeptical and try to find out for themselves. And I think that's where we're at right now. I think people are finally understanding. For example, our local paper ran, negative stories about marijuana and marijuana cultivation before the election. And then once the election was over, you don't see another one for a month. And, you know, after that happens, people kind of see the dirty tricks that the Yes on B people played. And so we were only 1,209 votes short. If we can motivate a few people that were, less than enthusiastic about voting, if we can convert some that voted the other way, we're right in there. So it's, we don't have a real long road to go. It might take two or three election cycles, but we feel confident that eventually, when the truth gets out, we'll be able to.
And in the meantime, people are not going to get, or they're likely to feel somewhat nervous about growing and possessing the amount of marijuana that they need if they need larger quantities than 6 plants or 8 ounces.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, and we try to do our best to get the word out, but we're fighting a propaganda machine that has the government behind them, and the Board of Supervisors are doing what the propaganda machine wants. So it's an uphill battle. But
I understand there was some question of whether the absentee ballots might have made a difference in your Measure B vote, even though that B has now been placed on hold, part of it anyway. But you found the absentee ballots still, Measure B still won, right?
Well, we have a county where we have 47,000 ballots that go out, and 35,000 out of the 47,000 are absentee. So we're a county that votes pretty much by mail. So I don't know what exactly you were referring to, the absentee ballots, ballots are.
Yeah, I had read initially after the election that there was people who opposed Measure B said that it was premature for the Measure B advocates to be celebrating because there were a number of disputed ballots that hadn't come in that were absentee. And
yeah, I believe there were 1,400 disputed ballots that. I know where you're talking about. You're talking about some of the ballots that came in late or that they didn't count on the election night, and those were ones that got held up by the mail. Or we're sitting there.
They still confirmed the report that B won.
Yes, yeah, I think we're all in agreement that there's nothing we can do about recounting. We'll accept the result as B winning,
It's not a landslide or it's not a mandate. It's a slight margin of victory. And we just need to start chipping away at it.
We're talking with Jim Hill up in Mendocino, who's telling us kind of the struggles of medical marijuana activists to uphold the Measure 215 that passed over 10 years ago, which allows people to grow and cultivate medical marijuana, possess. Is it distribute, transport, and sell or not?
Well, it there is nothing in distribute, but it does, you know, to provide access. So, theoretically, carrying a medical marijuana cigarette across the room is transportation, sharing it with another patient's distribution. So I'm assuming that, you know, that it's implied that, yeah, there needs to be obviously, blind patients can't grow for themselves, and obviously people that are, paraplegics. And
now, there was a statewide effort. I'm sorry to cut into you. I'm sort of pushing here. I've got something of a time barrier. I apologize for cutting you off, Jim. There was a statewide move initially earlier this year to tax and regulate marijuana, sort of based upon the experience of Seattle, Oakland, and then measures passed in Santa Monica and Santa Barbara, and I think Santa Cruz passed one that was crippled by the Santa Cruz Police Department and the Santa Cruz City Council. But what's happened to that measure up there? And I mean, does it make any difference up in Mendocino? Or
I don't think it does. I mean, the dispensaries are paying $100 million a year at last estimate to the state. So we are being taxed at the end at the retail level in the, in the cities, with over 400 dispensaries, I believe, participating now. But, it's as long as it's illegal under, federal law, it's difficult, it's difficult to get everybody to participate, because in a way you're providing evidence that you may not want to provide to the federal authorities. So.
Weren't there also restrictions in Ukiah that were being pushed at a city level about growing your own marijuana?
Yeah, there was a backyard ban. There's a backyard ban in Willits also, which we believe Kelly, destroys that also, because that's putting limits of zero, which you can't do. But I believe those were working through new civil nuisance ordinances also. It wasn't a criminal ban. It was just a civil nuisance ban.
Well, you've played me out here at this end, Jim. I appreciate you taking 45 minutes to run me through some of the ins and outs of what's happening up in Mendocino with the people who are, I think, considerably more active than they are down here on the medical marijuana issue. I think you should send some missionaries down here. We need some medical marijuana missionaries to.
It's funny, because we have some of the WAM, the group of WAM, when they disbanded or when they shrunk, some of them have relocated. I don't know if George Hanamoto. Have relocated to Mendo. So yeah, we are, we're more birds of a feather up here, and hopefully we can make a change that benefits the entire state.
Any reports on what's happening in Arcata up north?
I don't stay in touch well enough to know what's going on up there. I know they're struggling with some issues in the cities. We're a pretty rural county where we're at. Ukiah is our county seat with 15,000 people, and it's the largest city, in the county. So, we're mainly about 70% rural. Probably 50 to 60% of us live on dirt roads. So we have different, different issues than Arcata does, which are based on, some of their housing and the things that I've heard in some of their dispensaries and how they're supplying their dispensaries.
Wow. Well, I appreciate you coming on the air. Give my regard to Pebbles.
I will, Robert, and we enjoy talking to you anytime. Just let me know, and I'd be happy to spend another 45 minutes helping your listeners.
If you got updates or breaking news, just give me a call at 831-423-4833. And if people want to reach you up in Mendocino, what should they do?
They can call us at 707-467-3888.
And run that number by me again.
707-467-3888.
All right, and that's for the medical marijuana, Mendocino Medical Marijuana Advisory Board, right?
Yes, that'll get to us.
All righty then. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you, Robert. Have a nice evening.
You too, man.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Gracias a la vida. Who will remember the hand so white and fine that touched the finest linen, that poured the finest wine? Who will remember the genteel words they spoke to name the lives of two good men, a nuisance or a joke? And all who know these two good arms know I never had to rob or kill. I can live by my own two hands and live well. And all my life I have struggled to rid the earth of all such crimes. Who will remember Judge Webster there, one hand on the gavel, the other resting on his chair? Who will remember the hateful words he said, speaking to the living in the language of the dead? And all who know these two good arms know I never had to rob or kill. I can live by my own two hands and live well. And all my life I have struggled to rid the earth of all such crimes. Who will remember the hand that threw the switch, that took the lives of two good men in the service of the rich? Who will remember the one who gave the nod, and the chaplain standing near at hand to invoke the name of God? And all who know these two good arms know I never had to rob or kill. I can live by my own two hands and live well. And all my life I have struggled to rid the earth of all such crimes. We will remember the poor shoemaker. We will remember the poor fish peddler. We will remember the strong arms and hands that never once found justice in the hands that ruled this land. And all who knew these two good men knew they never had to rob or kill. They each lived by their own two hands, and they lived well. And all their lives they did struggle to rid the earth of all such crimes. And all our lives we must struggle to rid the earth of all such crimes.
And that was Roy Bailey, Two Good Arms, from the album past masters. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. Call-in number here is 427-3772. In case you'd like to comment on anything you've heard, we've been listening to Jim Hill up in Mendocino. I'm going to get back now to the Downtown Commission and their July 24th meeting on the issue of looking over the supposed six-month review of the efficiency, the effectiveness, and the workability of the downtown parking lot. It's called Parking Lots and Garages Trespass Law. I call it the Parking Lot Panic Law because it's based on, a panicky notion of the situation there as far as crime goes. Crime is somehow significantly worse in the open parking lots and even the parking garages than it is elsewhere downtown. The solution to this is removing everybody from the area and declaring it a forbidden space unless you're parking a vehicle or retrieving a vehicle, and then only for 15 minutes. And again, we're going to hear Zach Friend, the police officer who is the public relations guy, essentially justifying the police department's failure to twice provide statistics on the issues of crime in the city around the parking lots and how things have changed in the last year and that sort of thing, if they've changed at all, which would go to how well this law is working. This very unusual Santa Cruz law passed by Mayor Ryan Coonerty through the city council, which makes it illegal to chat with someone in a parking lot, to sit down and read a book in your car for 16 minutes, or to change your baby's diapers and then take a nap in your car.
Well, I did provide you with calls for service broken down by call type, if you remember, but that wasn't because it was requested of me. That was just because I did it. There was no specific request from the city council for such a thing. It was just information I provided, information I thought would be useful. So to answer your question, the answer is yes, unless that had been a request from the council on that.
Okay, so if we're in that position again. Mm-hmm.
If you're in that position again, then you would want to lobby your council members to include in the motion that certain information be requested on the review.
It came to us first.
Yeah, I understand that, but you don't have the authority to pass the ordinance or to direct staff to do certain things like this. I mean, you can make requests of Marlon, but of additional staff is what I mean. So what you would have wanted to have done was ask the council in their motion to include the request for specific information to come back to you or back to them, which was not made.
I'm sorry, I don't want to belabor this point too long, but I do need to understand this one piece, which you're talking about the after. I'm talking about at the time.
Right, okay.
Because it sounds like at the time we should have insisted, if we were being asked to evaluate this advisorily and send it to the city council, we should have insisted on certain statistics then, or you're saying we wouldn't have got them even if we insisted on them?
You may not have necessarily have even gotten them at that time, except for the fact that I did provide them to you, as you remember.
Okay. All right, that's it. Thank you.
And actually, as I mentioned before, Zach Friend did not provide meaningful statistics on the differences between supposed crime rates in the parking lots or parking garages and crime rates, let's say, on the sidewalks or in other public areas. That statistic was never provided, even though it was requested by a lot of us.
And Julie, did you have a question?
The other piece, this may be Lieutenant Martinez's.
This is Julie Shattuck, again, of the Downtown Commission. The previous speaker, or the female questioner, was Sheila Coonerty, who's on the Downtown Commission and is the most outspoken, well, wouldn't call her a critic of the police department, but someone who wants statistics and is concerned she's not getting them.
Purview. The second piece of this was the extension of the ordinance to the lots, the surface lots. I was wondering if you might have some testimonial or some observations around any changes there as a result of the ordinance being applied.
And the point here is that the ordinance as it was first proposed would have made it illegal to be in parking lots or garages for more than 10 minutes. That was extended to 15 minutes and then limited to garages and only one parking lot,
number 9, the so-called homeless parking lot across from the homeless meal near the Cafe Pergolisi on Elm Street. And the next year, Coonerty and the gang, that's Mayor Coonerty, came back and wanted to have this extended to all parking lots. And that's what Julie Shattuck means when she asks about all parking lots, because she's saying, what's been the effect? And this is the response.
Something I really didn't anticipate seeing is an actual decrease in violence in the garages.
This is a lieutenant in uniform talking. Is it Hernandez? Is it Martinez? I'm not sure, and I apologize to the lieutenant for not getting his name right. But he and Sergeant Harms were the two police officers, along with Zach Friend, that testified before the Downtown Commission.
What's actually helped is that opportunity for officers to contact people loitering in the lots after the bars close and actually ask them to continue moving along and to go home and call it an evening. So that has, in turn, been a huge advantage and probably decreased a lot of the violence we've been seeing in the garage. Not to pat ourselves on the back or you on the back by any means, but I think it's a direct result of this ordinance, because a lot of the lots tend to be where people had congregated after the bars had closed, as city staff had already reported. And for us to be able to ask them to move along and to point out that, you know, parking lots are not necessarily a place for them to loiter or congregate. And
so he's admitting it's an anti-loitering law. And if this were really the concern, and I have some concern, too, about drunks coming out of bars in a way, and I mean, it can be an unpleasant situation, then the law could have been limited to the hour or two following the closing of the bars, you know, or it could have been limited to the nighttime hours. But none of that happened. It was a broad-based law that criminalizes everybody 24 hours a day and does, at the very moment I'm speaking, if you walk into a parking lot or garage, unless you're walking directly through or unless you're parking or retrieving a vehicle, you're a criminal. You are committing a crime. And that is a preposterous criminalization of innocent behavior.
For drunk brawls to occur has been a huge help to us.
Okay, and I was talking about the surface lots.
Surface lots as well. Yeah, I'm not just talking garages
okay.
only.
Okay.
Now, when little bars close, we specifically require bars that have entertainment to clear out their storefront to make sure crowds are not loitering in the streets or in the fronts of their businesses. And that could be, you know, crowds in the hundreds. So they leave, they go to the parking garages or the parking lots, depending on the business location. And that's where they tend to loiter. And
of course, we made the argument, those of us who oppose this law, that forcing people to leave the parking lots in 15 minutes would actually encourage drunk drivers to drive who might not be able to drive, would rather sleep it off in their car in the parking lot, in violation of the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, of course. But still, it seemed to be another another absurd consequence of this law. Now, admittedly, I haven't heard of anybody getting into drunk auto accidents because of this. But then would I have? I don't know. You know, I don't think the police would be announcing it broadly that their law is promoting this. And it was pointed out to me that they didn't really make up this law. It came from the parking lot attendants initially. But you see how enthusiastic and how uniformly supportive the police are of this law. So I do call it their law.
Fights, breakouts, stabbings, things like that.
So have you increased the number of the CSO trips through those surface lots as well as the downtown hosts? I think we had a discussion about that as well as
Keith would have to testify to the downtown hosts. We only have one CSO working in the downtown, but the increased number of officers has resulted, of course, in increased patrols in the parking lots as well. Okay. I can tell you that the city staff, public works staff, probably make more contacts in those parking lots than we do on a daily basis. They are constantly in those lots, and they're the city representative there when it comes to, I guess, informing the public of the new ordinance, and I think they've done a very good job of it.
Any other questions or comments on this item?
And again, I unfortunately don't have the small number of stats that were delivered by the police. I think they got the number of crimes over the last year in the lots, but not as compared with previous years or compared with other areas. And I wish I had those stats in front of me right now. I think I passed them on to Huff or Human Rights Organization members to try to scan them in and put them online.
or perhaps they're buried in my binder. I'll go take a look. But the real issue, I mean, obvious things like car burglaries. I mentioned my car was burglarized. I was in a city parking lot at night. And it didn't seem to stop my car from getting burglarized. And that doesn't mean I would support this law anymore. You know, I mean, part of the cost of doing business in the city is an occasional burglary, and that happens. Not that it's positive, not that I support it, not that I wasn't pissed that it happened to me. But to declare that everybody else's liberty has to be eliminated and to suddenly have an unconstitutional no loitering law all over Santa Cruz and ten solid square blocks to eliminate the possibility of this when it doesn't eliminate the possibility. Even if it did, I'd be nervous about such a law. But the fact that it doesn't, to me, shows the arrogant power of the police department and the subservience of the city council and the city staff. And I don't think that can be repeated too many times, because every time a person has to get up and leave her car early, not read a book there, not chat with a friend, has to remove themselves from a bit of public space because of this stupid law, I think it's a form of, to me, it's a form of criminal imposition on the community when this is being done. I don't care if it's being instituted by authority or by thugs who are intimidating you, you know, or by some psychopath who's screaming at you. However it's done, whether it's done nicely or in a nasty way, it still results in your liberties, basic liberties, being fundamentally restricted for no good reason. And that's particularly in a time when the war on terror and the war on drugs and the war on the poor people, actually, is being used as the excuse to give the police more power and to remove from you your rights, I think you've got to say no. And then when we say it together, they pay attention. So in the parking lot next to the farmer's market every Wednesday, dozens of people violate the parking lot 15-minute law, and the police look the other way because they tried not to at one time and give tickets, and people just looked back, and then they kind of put their ticket books away and kind of, okay, well, I'll go somewhere else. So lawlessness under cover of law is something that people concerned about real social order, and which real social order involves social freedom, we've got to be vigilant ourselves.
Thank you very much.
I have a question of us. Are we going to move on to another item?
Well, it's not an action item, but yeah, keep going. We're not going to move on because we have one last piece of this item, and that is Robert Norse wanted to speak for a couple of minutes, but if you want to say something else before he speaks, go ahead.
It's just a question. What do they call that? Anyway, it's a question about if I was interested in putting forth a motion to ask the city council to get more specific information. I can't do it now, right? I would have to put it on the agenda.
I'm pretty sure this is not an action item on our agenda. It's not an item we can take an action on, but we can put it on our next agenda.
And this is really, I don't want to say it's double talk, but in a certain sense, it kind of falls into that category. You just hear Chair Jerry Mandel saying that Sheila Coonerty cannot ask for she can ask for information from the city council. She can ask for information from the staff, and she can also call for action on this item, except that Jerry Mandel, in an unusual approach, has scheduled these items as non-discussable information items, which in her mind rules out public comment. Not in the mind of activists with the First Amendment Coalition up in San Francisco and the East Bay, the Terry Frank and Peter Scheer and people who monitor the public, the Brown Act, the Public Meetings Act, that gives you certain rights at these meetings, and one of them is to comment on these items. So you have, again, a constricted process which not only constricts members of the public, but constricts those members of the public who are specifically appointed to these commissions to monitor what's going on and to present their opinions to city council.
Can I do that?
Thank you. We'll be collecting future agenda items at the end of this meeting.
Okay.
We'll put that on the list.
That's all I had to ask.
Okay. And, Robert, you wanted to speak to us for a couple of minutes on the parking lot ordinance.
I suggest that Sheila file a Public Records Act request because it looks like, for some inexplicable reasons, I don't know what the police department has to conceal, and it doesn't think it's going to take a great amount of time. You know, you're not getting the information that it would seem to be obviously necessary to make informed decisions. It's not entirely true to say you are simply an advisory body. You do most of the work on these issues. You hear most of the public testimony. You know, you bring the final product to the city council, and they pretty much make a final few modifications, but you do the work. And you're not getting the information. So this is outrageous obfuscation and shows the power of the police department to do this unless you check them. Now, you're not going to check them as a body, I don't think. You know, but I think individual members can, and members of the public can. One of my primary concerns about this law, it has been, of course, its use. Primarily, it was initially, all comments to the contrary notwithstanding, an anti-homeless measure because the major crime in these areas was camping. And if you look at the stats, that's what you find. You didn't get stats originally from Zach Friend or anybody else about the changes between crime outside the parking lots and crime inside the parking lots to indicate any kind of crime surge over a time, either now or before. This is well documented. And they're continuing to hold up on this. So it's obvious this is simply an appropriation of power to the police to, you know, make their task easier. And in some cases, with respect to drunks and parties, it's a positive thing. But this excludes people 24 hours a day from these lots. It also mandates selective enforcement. We know this. There's evidence of this. Every Wednesday, this police department ignores 75 people drumming and playing music and sitting and socializing as they should because it's traditional Santa Cruz activity, but this is in violation of this law, which means every other incident where they arrest people and take them in, they're going to have to claim that they were too busy to go after 75 people violating this ordinance. So it's to me, it's a preposterous situation where you have selective enforcement and mandated selective enforcement, which is unconstitutional.
Robert, I've just been told that you've spoken for 2 minutes. Could you try to summarize your comments and wrap it up? Thank you.
Originally, I thought it was 5 minutes. Then you said it was 3 minutes, but I will try to summarize my comments.
No, I never said three or five.
This is supposed to be a public, you know, discussion. It's supposed to be a six-month analysis where there's some kind of input from the community. I'm not really surprised. It's okay. It's not okay, but it's expectable. Regarding the comments made by the officers, and I think that's primarily what has to be concerned, what we have to be concerned about here. Again, you have no stats on anything. You have advisory opinions. Consider this. If you were in court, a police officer might be called to the stand. He might give his opinion generally about stuff, and that's what you're getting, generalized opinions, no stats. But there has to be evidence to convict people. Where you are convicting every individual in Santa Cruz and every tourist of criminal behavior for sitting for 16 minutes in a vehicle in a parking lot or entering and sitting under a tree in a parking lot at any time at the absolute discretion of a police officer or law enforcement officer. That's what you're doing. And I know you didn't do it. The council did it, but you can't pass the buck because you passed it on to the council with a positive recommendation. Your responsibility is to, if you haven't got the evidence, you pass a negative recommendation until you get the evidence. And you have selective enforcement happening here that makes the city legally liable. Thank you.
Thank you, Robert. And now we are going to move on to our item of general business, the Cedar Cathcart parking structure.
And this next item of business, the Cedar Cathcart parking structure, is actually a subject that's come up through HUF members that is a matter of concern to musicians on the street, people at the drum circle, who are concerned that the drum circle, which traditionally plays at the parking lot number 4 next to the farmer's market every Wednesday, is going to suddenly find itself covered over by a 4-story parking garage. I don't know if it's 4 stories or 5 stories. $20 million structure, which the city is trying to cook up and build there. And there's actually a lot of concern about the cost and how the money is going to be raised, and is it going to be with new parking meter fees, and are free lots going to be made into pay lots, and so forth. And actually, the main business of both the Downtown Commission meetings of June and July, which I was focusing on this parking lot panic law because I regarded it as so outrageous, a civil liberties violation. But the main business of the Downtown Commission was to look into this other issue, which is fundraising for the parking lots.
I mean, for the parking structure at Cathcart and Cedar. And if people are interested in this, I encourage them to get in touch with me at 423-HUFF. I have the tapes. You can hear that at some point. I don't want to play it on the air because it's there's a limit before I fall asleep or go mad in the studio listening to these people talk about these issues. But I'd be happy to make them available for people to hear. And the Downtown Commission has an obligation to make these tapes available to the public to hear. You can always go hear them at the Public Works Department, which is in the complex of buildings right next to the City Council chambers. It's time for another brief musical break to be followed by some street interviews, the voices of people other than me. Can you imagine? Stay tuned, and if you have any comments, call in 427-3772. That's Roy Bailey in These Hard Times, also the name of an earlier album from the 80s that he did. Good stuff. So, it's Free Radio you're tuned to, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, and we're going into some street interviews, so don't go away. Coming up next at 8 o'clock, it's From the Cream to the Dregs with Uncle Dennis. Going back in time to hear some tunes that you probably haven't forgotten, but you might want to, well, or not, as the case may be.
So it's July 26, 2008. It's about 9 o'clock. I'm down here off in front of New Leaf Market, and we have another signature on the petition to unchain the public sidewalk, actually the New Leaf, Alfresco's, Cafe Campesino fenced-off area that is now empty, and of course people instead are congesting around the edges of this green fence. We have an individual who's signing up here. So what... Why are you signing this petition, sir? What do you think of it?
I think it's a good thing. We got police brutality and harassment. You know, it's a public sidewalk, and they're trying to act like they own it. Because what, we're on the street? That don't matter. We're still people, and we have a right to the sidewalk. That's our spot to hang out. I've been here 3 months, but there's been people here chilling there, like they grew up on the Ave, and taking away their freedom. It's not right. Okay, that's it. Talking with? What's up? Your name again?
Irish.
Thanks, Irish.
We're talking with?
Hi, my name is Bob Saylor.
Hey, Bob.
Hi, I own Channel 1 Entertainment Network Live.
And you're also a guitarist and a bicyclist.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, what I'm willing to do is I'm willing to put this on Channel 1 and give you a full hour to explain what's going on here.
Sounds good.
And I guarantee that. I own the company. Yeah,
Sounds good to me, Bob.
I'm the founder and the owner of the company. It's not a problem.
All right.
Yeah.
Can I
just tell you a little something here?
Sure. Go ahead.
I've been playing here in this town, okay, for over 30 years. I'm a street musician, okay? I've been playing here for over 30 years. And busking is a way of life here. The street scene is very important to people here. And the after 10 o'clock scene is very important to people here. We don't make money when we play after 10 o'clock here. We play for art's sake. You know, that's what we play for. And they're taking that away from us. Why? I don't know. Now,
they don't want your kind around here.
Whatever. I'm serious. No, you know what? They're just doing what they're told from the powers that be.
Yeah.
Now, what you're doing is cool. This petition, I don't know how many signatures you got to get, but you definitely got mine. And I'm going to put you over the internet live for the whole world to see. And I'm going to come and broadcast what's going on here.
Cool.
And I will broadcast when the police come at 10 o'clock to try to shut us down. Believe me.
Now, maybe you could also
call me at 421-2733 or 332-4818.
Why don't you write that down?
Just set it on your thing. You're not going to listen to that?
Well, I've got a bunch of interviews. There you go. Write down name and number there. Yeah, I mean, it would also, write on, just grab a piece of paper off there. There you go. If you want to, I can give you a copy of this petition to put online if you want, get people to start signing it online. I don't have that capability, but if you're interested, that would be great, too.
Yeah, so, I have that capability. I actually own the whole company.
Right. Sounds good. I appreciate that, Bob. Thank you. I also do a radio show twice a week, and I'll be playing this interview tomorrow night on
I know. I want you to get me on free radio.
I mean, tomorrow morning on free radio. Okay, well, it's about 9:15 we're talking with.
Robert Leon Hutchin II.
A.K.A. Hutch.
Naval Air.
Well, sorry, Hutch. Be brief.
Yes. The story is that Santa Cruz addresses Mauer Building, Tim Bratton, Richard Anderson, and Steve Bear are ripping off the vests, and Donna Clark, but they're on their way out. The story is that all the vets are pulling back together, uniting together, getting rid of the riffraff, the truth quote.
You mean the riffraff like you and me?
No, I mean the riffraff like Steve Bear versus
Tim Bratton,
he's one of the riffraff.
Yeah, we got it. You know, hold it, Hutch. You know, I've heard this song. I'm sorry, I've heard this song for years.
Okay.
I want to know, wait a minute, no, wait a minute. I want to know what specifically is happening that shows this. I mean, what have there been some resolutions lately? I mean, what's the deal?
Yes,
like what?
Many resolutions. Larry Wilson, the combat commander of the DAB, VFW, has made resolutions.
Larry, I don't ever want to be quoted on anything on tape. Wilson, that Larry.
Okinawa, Willie. But what we're doing is we're getting rid of the guys who are dividing the veterans, and we're getting control of the building.
How are you doing that, and how do we know? I've heard this story for 2 years, and nothing has happened, man.
I can't really say exactly.
Yeah, I've heard this before,
We're doing it.
Well, I hope it's happening.
We're voting democratically.
Okay, I want more details when you actually know how it's being done.
I'll get you the minutes for meetings.
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, you know, know what's really going on. I'll get you the minutes of all the meetings, all the old...
That sounds good. Thank you.
I am the chaplain. That's my moral duty.
All right, chaplain. You can bless me as well. And Your Eminence, I thank you for that.
Well, I thank you, but...
Or should I say Your Holiness? I don't know. Maybe Your... You can call me Your Worthlessness if you'd like. That's it. Thank you very much, Hutch.
No.
One more thing. What is it?
Thank you for your endeavors.
Thank you, man.
Thank you. I don't know about you, but I think you're cool.
Thank you, Hutch.
The issue here, as has been talked about on Free Radio, at least on my show, is the problems that both vets and other people trying to use the vets' building in a legal way with public access have been turned away or blocked or demeaned by the management, specifically Tim Bratton. That's been the claim that we've heard from a number of people over the last couple of years, and there's always been a lot of talk about doing something, resolutions, attorney general's investigations, Judge Black's order. We hear this, we hear that. Most recently, we had the case of Thomas Goodwin, who was essentially arrested for going to the bathroom. He's a vet, a disabled vet, in the vet's building. He wasn't arrested specifically for that. He was arrested for trespass and then for battery when he tried to push the guy out of the way who was hassling him, the security guy. And he, I guess, I got the word from battle-ready Bob Patton of the Human Rights Organization that in the court today or yesterday, I guess it was today, Goodwin pleaded guilty to some minor charge so he could avoid trial. And he recently had a... I don't call it a breakdown or a hospitalization. He had to go up to the vet's hospital in Palo Alto. So he's not really in the mood to fight a jury trial, which is too bad because this now appears on his record as a guilty plea and seems to give more evidence to those who want to believe that the management and the police are the good guys in this situation. In some cases, you know, you've got to look at every case by case. But I've gotten so many accounts of problems around with Bratton and the vets hall that I'm really concerned that the public access be restored there. And indeed, I think that may be happening. Huff has done some tabling outside the vets hall, and there's been apparently documentation provided that the vets hall is supposed to be open to the community. So the next time some goon in a yoga outfit tries to harass you or some fellow tries to tell you you're not allowed in there to use the restrooms, maybe we should give out little pieces of paper that are copies of this. I guess it's an opinion by some county official that is supposed to give you access to the public building. This shouldn't be necessary, but apparently it is. Anyway, we'll be talking more about this at some point in the future. And let's continue with street interviews in the last 10 minutes of Bathrooms, Piers, Broadsides. Actually, I do want to announce again, remind you that on Sunday, August 10th at 10 a.m., we're going to have back with us by phone in the studio Bob Whitaker, the author of the book Mad in America. He's coming out with another book on the essentially the bogus claims of psychiatry and pharmaceutical companies around psychiatric medication and the stats that show better results from people not using psychiatric drugs than using them. And we tried to get people who are supportive of psychiatric medication, like F. Fuller Torrey, to come on the air and talk about this issue, but they won't do it. Maybe they're just too busy or taking care of too many people or who knows what they're doing. But I'd love to get some decent debating going, but it's kind of hard to do it. I know I was also trying to line up debates and other issues, and I'm not always too successful in that, and hopefully I'll be more so because I love to see the issues laid out as starkly as possible so people can make some intelligent choices or at least do some thinking about it. So that's going to be 10 o'clock on Sunday. It'll be going for about an hour and 15 minutes. We may have a couple of questioners in the studio. I've invited some activists to give questions to Bob Whitaker. You can find out more about this by going to IndieBay.org, Santa Cruz Indie Media, and Googling for Bob Whitaker, W-H-A-T-A-K-E-R. It's actually on the calendar for the Santa Cruz Indie Media. And you can review his past shows. He's been on at least two past shows, I think three, but I think we only have two online. And also some written material from Street Spirit. And by the way, this month, Street Spirit will not be out. Editor Terry Messman of Oakland is ill, but I spoke to his office, and they are going to be providing us with Street Sheet, which is a San Francisco thinner, poorer, but still pungent version of... it's a news publication, a monthly news publication sold by homeless people in San Francisco by the Coalition on Homelessness up there. And a lot of their back issues for the last couple of years, in fact, all their back issues for the last couple of years, are archived on the net under Street Sheet. So some of those will be out and available, and there'll be no issue of Street Spirit for August because the editor is in the hospital. So good luck to Terry. I don't know what his problem is. Terry Messman, I hope he recovers soon. Back to the street interviews, and soon you'll be hearing some old-fashioned tunes, so don't go away. Also want to remind you that Human Rights Organization meets 2 o'clock on Saturday at Taqueria Vallarta. That's the Mexican place on the corner of Pacific and Cathcart in downtown Santa Cruz, 2 p.m. Saturday.
So it's now about 9:15 here in front of New Leaf Market, and I'd say we have a crowd of about, I don't know, 30 or 35 people, again, kind of lining the edges of the sidewalk, allowing free traffic back and forth to the movie theater up and down Pacific Avenue, although there's a completely void, blank area where people could be sitting, standing, socializing inside the area closed, chained off area. That actually is a public sidewalk leased by private businesses. Bob, the musician, tuning up here, giving us a little of his music. And the lights at New Leaf Market have gone out. Closed probably about 20 minutes ago.
And I think that's going to be it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides tonight. The quality of the last few interviews was not the best. Hopefully we've got some better interviews on Sunday coming up. And as I said, special guest Bob Whitaker, 10 o'clock. He's really good. I encourage you to both go to Indie Bay and read some of the stuff he's written or the outline of the research he's done, and then join the show and feel free to call in. You can also give me questions in advance at 423-4833. 423-HUFF is also the line to call if you've got concerns about police misconduct you've seen or experienced. And if you want to be on the show and you want to talk about other issues that specifically concern poor and homeless people, that's always of interest to me. So thanks for being with me on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Here's a song that's 600 years old called The Song of the Leaders. It's about the peasant rebellion, or the English peasant rebellion of the 1380s, I believe. And it's all about Ball and Taylor, Rye and Lister, Grindcob and Jack Straw, the leaders of that rebellion. This is The Song of the Leaders. And next up is Uncle Dennis's from the cream to the dregs. So stay tuned for that.
The men of Kent have met today to put oppression down, and joined with Essex valiant sons to march on London town. With Surrey and with Middlesex, with Suffolk, Norfolk too, and gallant lads from Hertfordshire to see the struggle through. With Ball and Tyler, Orr and Lister, Grindcop and Jack Straw. From miles around unto Blackheath the people made their way, and John the priest of Colchester these words to them did say. When Adam toiled to win his bread, and Mother Eve she spun, all folk were equal, one and all, and masters there were none. Save all and Tyler, Orr and Lister, Grindcop and Jack Straw. On Corpus Christi in the morn we gathered on Bankside, then boldly entered London town, the gates were opened wide. Oh, John of Gaunt, that traitor, we burnt his palace down, threw all his treasure in the flood, yet never took one crown. For Ball and Tyler, Orr and Lister, Grindcop and Jack Straw. Then to the temple off we went to flush the lawyers out. We burnt their charters and their books and put them to a rout. They all went scuttling for their lives, a-squeaking out with fright. Like imps of hell or sewer rats, it was a wondrous sight. To Ball and Tyler, Orr and Lister, Grindcop and Jack Straw. Upon the 14th day of June, the king rode to Mile End, and he spoke softly to us all, I am the poor man's friend. Your wrong shall all be righted, all bondsmen be made free. Oh, curse the day we trusted him, for he lied wickedly. To Ball and Tyler, Orr and Lister, Grindcop and Jack Straw. At Smithfield next we met the king, the nobles gathered around. The Lord Mayor struck a killing blow, while Tyler struck the ground. Our masters bared their teeth and smiled to see our hero slain. You have been slaves since you were born, and slaves you'll now remain. Ball and Tyler, Orr and Lister, Grindcop and Jack Straw. The men of England long ago rose to demand their rights. Though they've been dead 600 years, remember them tonight. They raised the flag of liberty, they fought the battle well. They died, but others will arise to ring the freedom bell. Like Ball and Tyler, Orr and Lister, Grindcop and Jack Straw.
The earth beneath the surface dust is cold and damp and raw, and holding but the memory of what has gone before can almost be forgiven for remembering the dream of the wall of stones around the homes of the villagers of Eam. The villagers of Eam. In August 1665, along the cobble roads, between the houses dark and high, the carriers with their loads. We're leaving for the northern towns, the capital and crown, and also leaving far behind the plague of London.
Tuned into FRSC, the finest radio in Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org, the host of the R. Duck Show here, sitting in for Uncle Dennis, cream to the dregs. Stay tuned for our own little special 70s, 60s influenced music for the next few hours.
Shake the hand, take it from your ear, make it like a mouse. Smash! I'll speak to the masses, to the media.